Hello, my name is Lynn Strong in Dodds. I'm a reporter for DerivSource, and today we're going to talk about Ceph. We're looking at an industry expert. Sasan, can you please give us some information about yourself?
Yes, sure. I'm Sasan Danish. I'm managing partner of Fee Trading Software. We specialize in market structure issues in the OTC space, and of course, the big areas that we're involved in at this stage are the OTC derivatives markets, both in the US and Europe.
The first question we will be looking at today is that when Ceph started in February, the volume of derivatives through the new platforms plummeted by one-third as traders waited to see how the new systems would work. However, volumes have rebounded with data and flow concentrating among the top three players. The question here is, do you think this trend will continue, and what is the outlook for new players?
I think in the short term, the trend will continue, and I think there are two aspects to this. One aspect is looking at the impact on the platforms, and you're quite right that the liquidity has stayed within the incumbents. There's a good reason for this. Effectively, the industry's business model has not changed significantly since the Ceph go live. It's still dominated by the RFQ workflows, and whilst that remains the case, it will be difficult for new platforms to gain share. But that doesn't mean that there's been no change within the incumbents. One of the big areas of opportunity for the existing platforms is actually on the interdealer broker side. So platforms such as ICAP, BGC, GFI, Talet, Tradition, those guys now all of a sudden have the opportunity to go out and look for not just their dealer clients, which is their core franchise, but also potentially get liquidity from the more tech-savvy buy side and also hedge funds. That's a big change that will, over time, have a big impact in the market. It will be over time. It will be slow, but that's a big platform structural change. There's a second aspect to that question, though, and that's more not looking at the platforms, but looking at the impact on the buy side, sell side, and hedge funds. There's no question that HFT shops do want to become, or at least a portion of the HFT community want to become, providers of liquidity. Their niche is likely to be for the benchmark IRS and the liquid credit indices. So I think for a certain portion of the swaps world, there is an opportunity here as we look further out to see new entrants and new players. Their challenge is going to be that it takes time to calibrate their pricing and risk engines to manage swaps, as opposed to, for example, listed derivatives. So it's not surprising that the process has been slow, but the direction of travel, I think, is clear that for those very liquid interest rate swaps and also the liquid credit indices, there is opportunity here for new entrants.
What kind of new entrants do you see in the market? Is it going to be small niche players? And what do you think will happen to some of the middle-sized players?
I think there is a challenge for the mid-size, just because you need to have some kind of edge. For the specialists, that's easy. They just focus on very specifically on uncertain areas. And of course, the big flow dealers can fall back on that volume and their client franchise. I think the mid players do need to bring something specific. There's still a place for them because, for example, a large regional can fall back on their geographic franchise, for example. So there are certain opportunities for the mid-sized players, but it tends to be more in the context of looking at what they're strong at and focusing on that. I think for the smaller players, in terms of the hedge funds, et cetera, that I was talking about, it's more bringing their expertise from some of the listed markets into play for the within either swaps or swap futures. They've already built a reasonable sized infrastructure for trading those kinds of products very aggressively, and to bring that infrastructure to play in the swaps world. It will only work for the liquid products though.
And just finally on this question, overall, how do you see volumes in the future?
They will go up. Obviously, we had the initial significant drop and then a significant rebound. That was a one-off. But I think over time, one interesting aspect will be on Ceph versus off Ceph, and just how much can stay off Ceph, if you like. In my view, as the community gets more used to the on Ceph trading and start to calibrate their own trading models, we will see a continued increase on Seth trading.
Right. Well, thank you. Question two is really looking at the cross-border fragmentation. A recent report from ISDA showed that there is a transatlantic split with volumes between Europe and U.S. dealers falling 77% since the introduction of the U.S. rules. It is also said there had been greater price volatility and, quote unquote, a shifting in the nature of trading from cleared to bilateral risk management. Do you think this will continue? Are you seeing this type of fragmentation as well?
Yes. Yeah, and so it definitely exists and it is likely to continue. It really, at the very big picture level, the issue is how well European and US legislators can cooperate together. So I think recently that level of cooperation does seem to have improved. But there is a challenge here because MiFID II is so far behind Dodd-Frank. You know, we're talking 2 years, that kind of level, that a lot of what's going to be in MiFID II is at this stage unclear. The details are just not there. So in that context, given the thrust of the idea about having a single liquidity pool across the two regions is all based around having roughly equivalent regulations in place, that the challenge is more for the CFTC in the short term to effectively grant various no-action relief to allow European actors to access US liquidity. It's probably more that way around at this stage because MiFID II is behind Dodd-Frank. And the real challenge is when you look at it like that, then in practice, the level of no-action relief that the CFTC is willing to consider is nowhere near sufficient to allow an aggregation of the liquidity pools in the short term. So, of course, there are various areas that they're looking at to simplify and perhaps looking at qualifying MTFs and so on. But really, the big picture is that we should be resigned to the fact that there will be a separation of liquidity. And that means that there will be occasional increased volatility and pricing anomalies between the two different markets.
And why are you hopeful that cooperation has increased?
I think the change in management in the CFTC has had an impact. And I think also from the ESMA side, from Europe, as we're now in what's called level two of the ESMA discussion. So as the MiFID II regulations start to get into the detail and it's being worked on, it's easier for the European regulators to have those substantive discussions with the CFTC. So one is for practical reasons that as MiFID II is progressing, it's easier to then have the detailed discussions that are necessary. And I think the other one is the new management on both sides are probably more attuned to cooperation than perhaps was the case a year ago.
But in the meantime, as you point out, MiFID II is 2 years away. So do you think this fragmentation will continue for the next 2 years?
I think for quite some time. So yeah. At least the way I look at this, it would be a very good idea for everybody to plan on the basis that those liquidity pools will not be as synced up as they should be, and to work on that basis.
Right. So the volatility will continue.
Yes. Yeah. And the associated pricing anomalies. You know, we're used to now thinking about the capital markets as a global market, which means that typically it's rare to find pricing anomalies. Well, we're likely to find those pricing anomalies, especially at periods of market stress.
So the status quo for a while.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I certainly appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.